They lunched at the same Mexican restaurant as before. It was almost empty, as before, the same Sony film editors laughing at the corner table. They must come here every day, Evans thought. But somehow, everything was different, and not just because his body ached and he was on the verge of falling asleep any moment. Evans felt as if he had become a different person, and their relationship was different, too. Jennifer ate quietly, not saying much. Evans had the sense she was waiting for him. After a while, he said, "You know, it would be crazy to imagine that global warming wasn't a real phenomenon." "Crazy," she said, nodding. "I mean, the whole world believes it." "Yes," she said, "the whole world does. But in that war room, we think only about the jury, and the defense will have a field day with the jury." "You mean the example you told me?" "Oh, it's much worse than that. We expect the defense to argue like this. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you've all heard the claim that something called global warming is occurring because of an increase in carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. But what you haven't been told is that carbon dioxide has increased by only a tiny amount. They'll show you a graph of increasing carbon dioxide that looks like the slope of Mount Everest. But here's the reality. Carbon dioxide has increased from 316 parts per million to 376 parts per million. 60 parts per million is the total increase. Now, that's such a small change in our entire atmosphere that it is hard to imagine. How can we visualize that?" Jennifer sat back, swung her hand wide. "Next, they'll bring out a chart showing a football field, and they'll say, 'Imagine the composition of the Earth's atmosphere as a football field. Most of the atmosphere is nitrogen. So, starting from the goal line, nitrogen takes you all the way to the 78-yard line, and most of what's left is oxygen. Oxygen takes you to the 99-yard line. Only 1 yard to go. But most of what remains is the inert gas, argon. Argon brings you within 3.5 inches of the goal line. That's pretty much the thickness of the chalk stripe, folks. And how much of that remaining 3 inches is carbon dioxide? 1 inch. That's how much CO2 we have in our atmosphere. 1 inch in a 100-yard football field." She paused dramatically, then continued. "Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury," she said, "you are told that carbon dioxide has increased in the last 50 years. Do you know how much it has increased on our football field? It has increased by 3/8 of an inch, less than the thickness of a pencil. It's a lot more carbon dioxide, but it's a minuscule change in our total atmosphere. Yet you are asked to believe that this tiny change has driven the entire planet into a dangerous warming pattern." Evans said, "But that's easily answered." "Wait," she said. "They're not done. First raise doubts, then offer alternative explanations. So now they take out that temperature chart for New York City that you saw before. A 5-degree increase since 1815. And they say, back in 1815, the population of New York was 120,000. Today, it's 8 million. The city has grown by 6,000%, to say nothing of all those skyscrapers and air conditioning and concrete. Now I ask you, is it reasonable to believe that a city that has grown by 6,000% is hotter because of a tiny increase in little old carbon dioxide around the world? Or is it hotter because it is now much, much bigger?" She sat back in her chair. "But it's easy to counter that argument," Evans said. "There are many examples of small things that produce big effects. A trigger represents a small part of a gun, but it's enough to fire it. And anyway, the preponderance of the evidence..." "Peter," she said, shaking her head. "If you were on the jury and you were asked that question about New York City, what would you conclude? Global warming or too much concrete? What do you think, anyway? I think it's probably hotter because it's a big city.
Right.
But you still have the sea level argument.
Unfortunately, she said.
The sea levels at Vanuatu are not significantly elevated. Depending on the database, either they're flat or they've increased by 40 millimeters. Half an inch in 30 years. Almost nothing.
Then you can't possibly win this case, Evans said.
Exactly, she said. Although I have to say, your trigger argument is a nice one.
If you can't win, Evans said, then what is this press conference this afternoon about?
Thank you all for coming, John Balder said, stepping up to a cluster of microphones outside the offices. Photographers' strobes flashed. I am John Balder, and standing with me is Nicholas Drake, the president of the National Environmental Resource Fund. Here also is Jennifer Haynes, my lead counsel, and Peter Evans of the law firm of Hassell & Black. Together, we are announcing that we will be filing a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency of the United States on behalf of the island nation of Vanuatu in the Pacific. Standing in the back, Peter Evans started to bite his lip, then thought better of it. No reason to make a facial expression that might be construed as nervous. The impoverished people of Vanuatu, Balder said, stand to become even more impoverished by the greatest environmental threat of our times, global warming, and the danger of abrupt climate changes that will surely follow. Evans recalled that just a few days before, Drake had called abrupt climate change a possibility on the horizon. Now, it had been transformed into a certainty in less than a week. Balder spoke in vivid terms about how the people of Vanuatu were being flooded out of their ancestral homeland, emphasizing the tragedy of young children whose heritage was washing away in raging surf, caused by a callous industrial giant to the north. It's a matter of justice for the people of Vanuatu and of the future of the entire world now threatened by abrupt weather that we're announcing this lawsuit today. Then he opened the floor to questions. The first one was, when exactly are you filing this lawsuit?
The issue is technically complex, Balder said. Right now, we have in our offices 40 research scientists working on our behalf day and night. When they have finished their labors, we will make our filing for injunctive relief.
Where will you file?
In Los Angeles Federal District Court.
What damages are you asking?
Another said.
What is the administration's response?
Will the court hear it?
The questions were coming quickly now, and Balder was in his element.
Evans glanced over at Jennifer, standing on the other side of the podium. She tapped her watch. Evans nodded, then looked at his own watch, made a face, and exited the podium. Jennifer was right behind him. They went inside the warehouse and past the guards. And Evans stared in amazement.
Culver City, Tuesday, October 12th. 1:20 p.m. The lights were turned down. Most of the people Evans had seen earlier were gone. The rooms were being stripped, the furniture stacked up, the documents packed into legal storage boxes. Movers were carrying out stacks of boxes on rolling dollies. Evans said, "What's going on?"
"Our lease is up," Jennifer said.
"So you're moving?" She shook her head.
"No, we're leaving."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean we're leaving, Peter, looking for new jobs. This litigation is no longer being actively pursued."
Over a loudspeaker, they heard Balder say, "We fully expect to seek an injunction within the next 3 months.
I have the fullest confidence in the 40 brilliant men and women who are assisting us in this groundbreaking case." Evans stepped back as movers carried a table past him. It was the same table he had been interviewed at just 3 hours before. Another mover followed, lugging boxes of video equipment. "How is this going to work?" Evans said, hearing Balder over the loudspeaker. "I mean, people are going to know what's happening." "What's happening is perfectly logical," Jennifer said. "We will file a request for a preliminary injunction. Our pleading has to work its way through the system. We fully expect it will be rejected by the district court for jurisdiction, and so we will take it to the Ninth Circuit, and then we expect to go to the Supreme Court. The litigation cannot proceed until the issue of injunction is resolved, which could take several years. Therefore, we sensibly put our large research staff on hold and close our expensive offices while we wait with the skeleton legal team in place."
"Is there a skeleton team in place?"
"No, but you asked how it would be handled."
Evans watched as the boxes rolled out the back door. "Nobody ever intended to file this lawsuit, did they?"
"Let's put it this way," she said. "Balder has a remarkable winning record in the courtroom. There's only one way to have a record like that. You dump the cases that are losers long before you ever get to trial."
"So he's dumping this one?"
"Yeah, because I guarantee you, no court is going to grant injunctive relief for excess carbon dioxide production by the American economy."
She pointed to the loudspeaker.
Drake got him to emphasize abrupt climate change. That nicely dovetails with Drake's conference, which starts tomorrow.
"Yes, but look," she said. "You know as well as I do that the whole purpose of this case was to generate publicity. They've got their press conference. There's no need to pursue it further."
She was asked by movers where to put things. Evans wandered back into the interrogation room and saw the stack of foam core graphs in the corner. He had wanted to see the one she hadn't shown him, so he pulled a few out. They showed foreign weather stations around the world. Of course, he knew that these particular charts had been chosen to prove the opposition's point, so they showed little or no warming. But still, it troubled him that there should be so many like these, from all around the world. He saw a stack marked Europe and shuffled through them quickly. There was another stack marked Asia. "Peter?" She was calling him. Her own office was already packed up. She had only a few boxes of things. He helped her carry them out to her car.
"So," he said, "what are you doing now? Going back to D.C. and your boyfriend?"
"I don't think so," she said.
"Then what?"
"Actually, I thought I'd go with you."
"With me?"
"You're working with John Kenner, aren't you?"
Evans said,
"How did you know that?"
She just smiled.
Heading out the back door, they heard the loudspeaker from the conference. Drake was talking now, thanking the press for coming, urging them to attend his forthcoming conference, and saying that the real danger from global warming was its potential for abrupt climate change. And then he said,
"Excuse me, but I regret to say I have an extremely sad announcement to make. I have just been handed a note that says the body of my dear friend George Morton has just been found."